Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Alan Carlos Hizon, AVP and Senior Sales Manager at Security Bank. With over two decades in financial services, Alan specializes in transaction banking, providing tailored cash management solutions to businesses of all sizes. He is a business strategist with verified international academic qualifications and multiple sales certifications. Alan excels in enhancing client relationships, driving transaction flows, and empowering sales teams. I've asked Alan to join us here today to share his story, experience, and insight on optimizing business transactions for easier, faster, and safer operations. So, Alan, thanks so much for joining us, my friend. How are you doing?
It's a pleasure, Daryl, and it's an honor to be on your show.
And thank you for being here. So now, one of the things I want to get into here is there's two sides of the coin. Just before I hit record, he was, Daryl, why? I'm not an entrepreneur, so why me? And part of it is you deal with businesses all the time, and especially with how they manage their cash, the pain points and the problems people face with that. You've got 20-something years experience with that. But then you also work in sales. And a lot of businesses, that's a huge pain point for them is how do I get more sales type thing? Or how do I train salespeople? Or how do I do all that? So first, I just want to, before we get into those, how did you get into finance and sales? Are either of those like family trades? Were your parents bankers? Did your mom and dad work in sales? Did you sit around the dinner table and your dad was like, "All right, Alan, sell me this pen." Is that how you were brought up?
The sales part, I just found myself naturally drifting into it because while my dad is a career salesman, and I grew up in a family that's really entrepreneurial. We had a bakery, and for the last 35 years, my family is into real estate. I'd say actually I'm the least entrepreneurial in our family. My younger brothers all had and have businesses of their own. My sister also is a part of the real estate business. But I'd say that banking was really not something that I was looking at when I grew up. When I was growing up, I actually thought it was boring. And growing up, I felt that I wanted to do something exciting. But somewhere along the way, I took a course. I chose my course in economics. And a teacher of mine told me, so it was a double major course. And I asked one of my mentors, what's the best complement for economics? So for my second major, I took management of financial institutions, and that's where I discovered the world of financial management. So there's banking, there's stock brokerage, financial advisory, insurance, and I felt an attraction to banking because I thought, or I felt that, or I saw that there were a lot of fields to go into banking. There were a lot of choices. So personally, I'm an includer type of person. So I like to gather a lot of stuff, discover, get into a lot of things. So I felt that starting a career in a bank was a way for me to discover what's out there and eventually find out what's good for me. I stumbled upon cash management by accident too. Sorry, I'm rambling, but my first 2 years in the bank after management training, I was in the branch, where I learned branch operations, and I was always the one being asked to deal with clients when there was a difficult client. So I was the one making the sale or presentation or explaining things. Eventually, I got an interview for head office positions. So I like telling this story because this is one of the things that I look back at something that happened in my past, and then I realize I'm where I am because of that. So I got two interviews. One for treasury and another for corporate banking. For the treasury, it turned out to be a research position. And for the corporate banking, it turned out to be a sales position, specifically for cash management or corporate products. And I remember my thesis mates, so this was in college, and one time they got so frustrated because I was always into extracurricular activities, student council, and they told me, "We don't care if you don't ever get to join us in our library trips to go hunting for reference materials," because I was paired with the greatest research team, research duo. They were the guys who would research cover to cover back in the day that the internet was not as popular. So I paired with them and they said, "We don't care if you don't join us for the library trips, just as long as when the thesis defense comes along, you're the one who's going to present." Okay, so I realized that, okay, I was, and the sales job was presented to me as, you're going to present our products to our customers and convince them. And I remember that interview until this day. And I was telling the interviewer, who was the head of corporate banking back then, ma'am, I'm your man. I can present it.
I love it.
That's what I was made for.
I love
so
it.
That's how I ended up in cash management. And I really love this field because we get to deal and help businesses. Yeah, as you said, all sizes. And we find out their problems. I like solving and helping out, solving problems. And at the same time, it's a dynamic thing. There's always something new coming up. And there's always different ways to approach different pain points and problems. So every customer is unique. They have a different combination of problems at a certain point in time. So you can come in. I've been in four different institutions. It's always been packaging different services to help them out where they're at the time. So sometimes they're ready for your service. Other times we go to a client, they're not yet ready, but 2 years later they call you up and they say, oh, we need this. So it's an ever-changing field. And of course, it's really a complement to other parts of the bank.
Right.
There's fine loans and there's also insurance.
Can you explain to people, what is cash management? What is that? For people that maybe just don't,
Yeah, so cash management, for cash management, we take care of the liquid asset or the liquidity of the client or of the business. Day-to-day collections, so the inflows of cash coming into your business. And we also offer services that help you manage your disbursements, your day-to-day outflows, you know, issuing. So it's more than, we give you a way to have not just more channels to receive payments and to receive payments faster, but also a way to identify who made the payments, because that's often a problem of businesses. Now it's direct deposits or depositing directly to the account has become more popular because, or has become more mainstream because of after the pandemic. People don't want to go out and bring cash or bring checks to the bank. But often that's the problem. They get the cash, but they can't really use it until they identify who it came from. And sometimes a customer makes a payment, they can't identify who made that payment. So it's stuck in their books until they are able to reconcile it. So we offer services that help them identify that. At the same time, on the disbursement side, I used to encounter the saying, or my dad as an entrepreneur would always tell us, be fast to collect and be slow to pay. Not really slow if you can delay it. Increasingly, that's not been the practice, especially for some business where you can't move your business if you can't pay your suppliers on time. And there are suppliers that are critical.
No, I agree 100% with what you're saying. That's a great quote. It's almost like hire slow, fire fast as well. Because cash is king. My wife and I actually just had a conversation. We're looking to, we're doing some property development stuff and investing in land and that. And we talked and you're like, do we use our cash or do we get a loan against it? And I was like, we get a loan against our cash and we use the loan. We're keeping our powder dry. We're not going to spend all that money and be like, oh no, we spent it. But we're going to go, hey, we've got this much. Will you loan us that much? And then we're going to go spend that. And we're going to build a moat around our little cash castle here. That's the
right. That's where banks come in.
So now I want to ask, because you talked about sales and that, I think this is a good time to pivot to that. What would you recommend to someone starting out and struggling with their business? Again, do you have any tips when you have someone that's under you, that's new to sales? What do you tell them? Do you just go, hey, here's the product listing and buy and kick them out the door? Or what do you recommend?
In sales, especially when there's a new guy, the first thing to do is really understand and know your product. Again, I've been in different institutions and every time I've had to really learn the new products, not just learn how they work or learn their features, but learn how they actually help the client. Because what's really important is is being able to communicate the value that you bring, that your service brings to the client. So it's not enough that you are able to ramble off the specifications or the features, but matching it to what they need or what are the problems, their pain points at that time, and matching the service so that they would be able to realize the value of what you're offering.
I love that. And a good example of this to help articulate for people listening that or like he said, what he said is really nice, but what does that mean? I think of it in terms of, you talked about pre-internet, but for, I know for some people listening, they're like, what? There was a time before the internet? But before the internet, we had these things called Yellow Pages, which is a big book. It was a big catalog. And if you wanted, that's, you would go look there. It was a big, thick book. Everybody, every house had them. They gave them to it for free. And it was basically a directory. It was like an A to Z book of all the businesses in your area. And they were all organized alphabetically. So if you wanted a haircut, that might be under barber or under hairstylist, right? So different categories, and they would be listed. And if you needed car insurance, it was under A, auto insurance. And when the internet came out, all the companies were optimizing and doing keywords and paid ads, all this stuff for auto insurance. But because there was no forcing function, when consumers went online, they were searching for car insurance. And that was a huge disconnect, because you have businesses that are optimizing and promoting auto insurance and advertising for those keywords, but the buyers are looking for car insurance. So part of what Alan has said was talking about knowing your product plus how it helps, so you can communicate the value you bring in language your customers use themselves. So you're that not selling auto insurance when they want car insurance. You're selling car insurance to people that are looking for that. And that is, it's not what I say, it's what people hear. And that is the important part about communication. I just wanted to spell that out, because I thought what you said was a great example, but I know some people, they might not have realized and gone deep into, they may not have read between the lines. So that's a great tip. That's what his tip was, for those that didn't get it. It was, understand what your product can do for people, the value it brings, and how to explain it to them in a way they would say it to themselves. That is so powerful. Yeah, that's great. That's great.
And may I add, you also need to consider who you're talking to. So in my work, we get to meet owners of businesses. We also get to meet their managers. So you have to come from where, you have to think, put yourself in their shoes and think of what's important to them, because they are the ones who will advocate for you into the company. Mm-hmm. If you're talking to the owner, then the decision making is faster. But if you're talking to managers who will make the recommendations, you have to appeal to them. And at the same time, you have to talk their language. Sometimes I meet with corporates and you have to speak in straight English and do technical terms. If you're talking to somebody in the IT, you have to at least use the technical terms. I never try to present myself as an IT expert. Having heard and encountered these things for a long time, you get to understand it and be able to communicate it.
Right.
That's really the fun thing for me. No, not a challenge, but it's a fun thing for me to have to adjust the way I talk every time I meet a new client.
I love that. And that's a great way to look at it, as a fun challenge. Again, sometimes we get so serious about what we're doing because our bills and this and all and our stress. But and when I want customers and I want to make this much money, but if you can let go of that and have fun with it, it becomes a game. And I love when you said to the who you're talking to and what they need. And sometimes also you need to know how to prepare them. You said something I thought was really important there. Sometimes you're talking to a manager and they're going to go present it. And that means you have to make them your mini sales rep, which means you have to take out all the mistakes they could possibly make and make it as simple as possible for them and do as much work as you can as possible to make their lives easier. So the message gets really, everyone's played that telephone game where you whisper in someone's ear and then they whisper.
Yes.
That's what you're doing, but you're doing it through a company. And so you're going to whisper it to one person who's going to whisper it to another and whisper it to another. And then it's got to get to the guy who's going to buy. And he has to go, yeah, that sounds like a great idea when it gets there. And then it has to match what you said, or else even if they buy, they may have false expectations. And so that's a really powerful. I love that.
That's why we try to make the information bite-sized. Right. So also part of my job is to train our branches how to sell our products to clients. It's like me speaking through them. Of course, they have their own style.
Right.
So really my job is to make it easier for them to start the conversation with the client. And then should the client need more explanation, then that's where they can bring me in. But it starts with them. So I need to really empower them, equip them with just the right bite-sized information that they can feed.
I love that. So we've danced around some things here, but to really hit the nail on the head, can you maybe list off what you feel are some of the most important skills or behaviors that someone has to have in sales. Again, we've already mentioned them, but just to give a succinct, like off the top of your head, what do you feel are the most important skills and behaviors?
Okay, I think a salesperson has to genuinely care for his customer, but at the same time, he has to balance caring for his company. So I've encountered a lot of people who are just really for the sale and for the sale, but
yeah,
you
I know
really
what I'm
have to genuinely want to help the customer. And the customer will feel it if you really want to help them.
Right.
But at the same time, you don't sell the company. You work within what the company can offer. So for me, if we cannot offer something that the client is asking for, we tell them and we explain why is it so. We don't just say it's company policy. We explain to them. At the same time, we offer alternatives. So if you come from a place of caring and wanting to help, everything will follow in the way you interact with the client. So that's that. I try to start with that mindset, or I try to have people that the sales teams that I work with, I try to have them start from that mindset so that from there they can really listen, and they will really listen to the client and have an affinity and try to help the client with what we can offer.
Good, great list. So now I want to pivot. And again, in your experience, what are some of the biggest mistakes businesses make when coming and trying to work with a bank?
Okay, so the unique thing or something I would say is different with the Philippine market when it comes to banking services. In other countries, in other areas, because interest rates are very low, I hear that most banks resort to giving or charging service fees for services. Here in the Philippines, because the bank is able to earn from interest rates, we can actually offer services without fees, but based on the balances that businesses or the company would have. So since we earn from that, so we are able to use the interest, whatever we earn from the interest or on deposits to cover the costs of the service. So advice with companies is that if they can find a bank that can offer them the right services for free, just for being a depositor, then by all means, make use of that. So try to find the bank that offers the most services that you would use for free. And then if they fit well, if you like the person, the branch people and the salesperson that you deal with, if you like them, if you feel good about them, then choose that bank.
Right.
So usually when you're starting a business, some years back before the pandemic, I hitched my cart, so to speak, to my brother, who's really a serial entrepreneur. So I was an investor in his business and he got me on the team. So I was in charge of finding the bank. And I really shopped around. And since we were a starting business, so I had to choose the bank that had the lowest opening balance because we really had minimal needs. But for a business, as your business grows, you might find that you would outgrow your initial bank. You will need to find banks that offer more services. But again, try to find the bank that offers the services for free just because you have deposits in the bank.
Right. I think that's a good tip. So yeah, actually we just met, I think it might've even been your bank because we're shopping around. I'm going to say something maybe you're not allowed to say, but the one is the worst number in business. One key employee, one key customer, one key bank. So I like to shop around and I like to let them know that I'm working with multiple people so they know that I'm married, but I'm very non-committal in my finances. We'll put it that way.
That's a good combination.
Yeah. So that's not something I think your company will let you say, but I think that's a great idea to shop around, to compare rates and deals, to have existing relationships with more than one bank, and to go where people can and figure out what works best for you and takes care of you. Maybe that goes without saying, that last part.
But Daryl, actually, again, it's a fun challenge for me to really communicate what is our advantage. So again, I've been in different institutions, and every time, there's no one bank or institution that has an advantage over in all aspects. So you will always be able to find a way to communicate how your bank is better than your customer's current bank, or at least how our services or how we have services that your current bank is probably not offering or not offering you.
Right.
There's sometimes that's key. I would know that a lot of times I would go to a customer and I know that their bank is offering this, but of course I wouldn't mention it. And if their bank didn't tell them that, and I would tell them, oh, we have this, then I'm the first bank to offer that. So that's also key because you really need to maintain a relationship with the customer. And it helps in my current company that it's not just me that's talking to the customer. So
right.
Ah. One may be, you're right, in business, one is not always good. And to have more than one person dealing with you with the bank, maybe in different aspects, but it gives me like a contingency or a fallback in case I miss communicating with the client. There's another one person who's going to be reminding the client about their relationship with the bank.
Right. Actually, you know what? Studies show that team sales outperform one-on-one selling. And I think part of why that is one, people like meeting people, but two, a big part of it is recency bias and attention. So that means when
yes.
you go, if I'm looking for a chiropractor or a dentist, I'm not going to look for the best one that's best rated wherever. You do maybe, but typically you often default to the most recent one you've interacted with
right.
or heard
yes.
from. And so if you have multiple people messaging a customer, they've been communicated with more, that you're fresh, kind of top of mind, out of sight, out of mind is basically the old saying. So team
right.
sales help with that. And then like you mentioned, if one, you can good cop, bad cop, you can get confirmation of stuff. You also, with two people pinging them, you're like holding their attention a bit more. I think that's a great tip. Where do you see
Although
things
we
going?
We always try to be good cops both sides.
Of course, of course, of course. Where do you see the future of things going? There's a lot happening geopolitically. There's a lot happening with currencies around the world. I'm personally anti-fiat and I'm anti-politicians having the ability to print money. There's crypto, things like that. Where do you see things in 5 years, 10 years? There's a lot of innovation happening. There's a lot of, that's it. Where do you see things going?
Okay, so I'm not going to touch on cryptocurrency or things like that. Just with cash management, you're right, cash will always be king, but cash comes in many forms.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that clients are increasingly being more comfortable transacting online, especially after the pandemic, where, you know, a lot of times we come across a client who doesn't want to try online for various reasons. We try to ask them, there's always this fear, whether it's not secure or just fear of the unknown.
Or
but
taxes.
I will know. Here in the country, we always reassure the clients that even if you transact online, it's protected unless the government has to subpoena your record. So it's not automatic just because you transact online, the government sees all your money. So we need to reassure clients that there's a law against protecting
really?
The balances in the bank. So
there's
the
not
government
in Canada.
Has to,
in Canada, just so people know. Check with your country. In Canada, speaking from experience, the government can reach into your bank account at any point in time and just freeze your assets because they have a question about your most recent tax return. So my personal experience is that a bank is not, and you can speak to this, but a bank is not the safe you thought it was because anyone with fancy legal paperwork can show up and suddenly you can't access any of it. And that for me was like, when it first happened to me, sorry, I'm going on a sidebar here. First happened to me, I think in 2010, something like that. I was worried. I asked a CPA friend about doing my taxes. He said, Daryl, your business opened like 4 or 5 months ago. Don't worry about your taxes. Like, you don't have any profit to worry about paying tax on. Just focus on surviving and being profitable.
Right.
Most businesses fail the first year. Worry about your taxes later. And so that's what I did. And then I knew I need to get my taxes done. I hired a CPA, but she was pregnant and she went into labor and she never got my taxes done. And I was traveling and I never got my box of receipts and that. And I just forgot about it. And then fast forward, it's the last day of November. I was in Ottawa. And I remember I had such a good November. I could pay all my December, January bills, I think February as well. And I still have money left in the bank. And I could buy everybody Christmas gifts that I had to pay for. And then I went to bed and I woke up December 1st and everything was zeroed out and frozen. And it was because my bank, the government wanted me to file my taxes, which I ended up filing. And then they ended up owing me money. But that whole two, 3 week period leading up to Christmas, first off, they took it all in one swoop, but gave it back over 3 months. And then the second part was, even though everything was frozen, that they took all the money out And so as payments were trying to process, the account was zero. And in Canada, they did this thing like overdraft fees. So non-sufficient funds, $50. So all these things, because it's the first month trying to get their payment. So now I have 700, I'm negative $700 because of all these fees that didn't go through. It was so stressful. And that really shook my faith in banks. I'm sharing that. Oh. I don't know. I don't know if I threw you a screwball. That's not what I invited. I didn't invite you on here to take out my griefs with the Canadian banking system on you, but
yeah, it's
do your taxes on time.
And the thing about it is that if you transact through the bank, at least, and you're doing legitimate business,
right,
it really gives you a paper trail. So it's more of a benefit for you,
right,
when you need to comply with the government regulations. But at the same time, it's not that easy, based on my experience or based on what I've seen. It's not really that easy for the government to just freeze your assets without cause.
Right.
It can happen, but they have to do it the legal way.
In the Philippines, not in Canada.
Oh, in the Philippines, yeah.
We had the trucker protests, and the government just froze without due legal process.
I heard that on one of your episodes.
Yeah, so sorry, you can tell I'm very pro-free markets, pro-entrepreneur, pro. Small government doesn't do anything. It takes and then redistributes, but it typically tends to redistribute to its friends. So that's,
as an economist, I'm also more of a free market guy. Yeah.
I digress. So let's talk about, you say more people doing business online. What about international? Like, how does that feed into the cash management side of things? And what are some of the big mistakes people make in that respect? Because especially with the Philippines, there's a lot of money coming here from OFWs. For people that don't know, that's overseas Filipino workers. It's a huge, I think it's something like 8% of the GDP is Filipinos abroad sending money back home. You got a lot of people that are running BPOs that are the office is here, but they're doing business internationally. Can you speak to that? What are some of the big mistakes and things that people get caught up in trying to do international business?
Okay. So for companies, for inflows of cash, for individuals, I'd say it's really more expensive if you try to have somebody bring in your cash, or try to have what they call a door-to-door cash payout, as opposed to doing a wire transfer to financial institutions. Because every time the bank or the financial institution uses people, then that's more costly, and the charges or the fees that they charge you are higher. So I would always recommend choosing the right institution and doing things electronically. For businesses, I think wire transfers, electronic transfers are really the norm. Mm. The industry has evolved in such a way that transactions that used to take, you know, in the old days, used to take several days, sometimes weeks, are just happen overnight, or is sometimes in real time if you have a bank that has offices in different jurisdictions. So increasingly, businesses are looking at real time. The catchword, this catchphrase is real time.
Yeah.
But of course, here in the Philippines, we have restrictions on real time in terms of amounts. Mm. So it's both for security and at the same time for liquidity.
Right.
But
right.
The time between sending money and receiving the money is becoming shorter and shorter.
Disclaimer, I'm just a monkey with a smartphone. Take what I say with a grain of salt advice. This is not financial advice. Talk to a proper financial, whatever. I've got friends who claim to be in the know in the higher tiers of finance in the world. And part of why I heard about the delays when you do transfers like that is that the United States is not the only country that has plates to mint and print US dollars. And so part of the delay in transactions that is they're trying to control almost like a lock system. If you're taking a boat and you're trying to go up river or something, and there's like little elevators you go through with the boat. I don't know if people know what I'm talking about, but if you're taking a boat downstream, it's easier than if you're trying to go back up. So they got to put you in a thing, fill it with water so you can get out and keep going. And there's that where there's pools of US dollars, so to speak, and just money. Like a perfect example, right after the pandemic, there was a lot of complaint about supply chain issues. But again, some people in the know, I'm a monkey with a smartphone, listen to me or not, up to you, said that it wasn't even that there were supply chain issues. It's that, for example, the Canadian government printed 50 years of their annual budget in 2020 alone. So they printed 50 years of the money that they were authorized to spend in 1 year alone. And so now when they go to buy goods from another country, there's debating about what is the true value of that and how do we settle the difference? And that's part of why there's supply chain issues, because with import-export, like if I grow a coconut here in the Philippines, it takes real resources. It takes water and manpower and fertilizer. And I can make things from this coconut. I can make coconut oil and like buko juice. And there's all these things I can do with this. And I can cut the tree down and sell it as lumber. So there's real tangible value to this, nutrient value and physical material value. So when I go, Canada goes, yeah, send us some of those. And I go, okay, what are you going to pay for it? They go, oh, we're going to pay some CAD, some Canadian dollars. I go, well, what's that worth? And they tell me, and I go, I don't believe you, because you just printed, you had 100 pieces of paper worth one each, and now you have 5,000 pieces of paper, and you're trying to tell me they're all worth one each. And that's part of why there's the delay in international transfers, is some of that settling out. And sometimes when we hear about crashes in the stock market and things like that, it's like cleaning the ledgers, and that there's actually lots of money that's even off ledger.
Daryl, if I may just not really correct your, but something about the transfers.
Yeah,
I'm not so privy. My economics is rusty, but speaking from an accounting point of view, transfers from a foreign bank to a local bank, it really just needs to, it's just really a matter of finding or passing on the funds from a bank that you have an account with to another bank that you have an account with. That's correspondent banking. So for a bank, it makes sense for the bank to let go or transfer the money as fast as it can off its books. So I can't say that the banks would really like to hold on to the money, because you don't really earn much from keeping that cash overnight, rather than making sure it gets to the receiving party as soon as you can. Maybe I'd like to restore the faith of the people that banks will really try to transfer your money as fast as possible. It may take some time because it has to go through another bank or another party, but eventually it will find its way to you. So
right.
Experience will teach you which bank transfers the fastest to your own bank. So it would have different.
That's a good tip. Yes, and I'm happy to be corrected. I'm happy to be corrected if I'm incorrect. It's an interesting world. That's all I'm going to say. We can't predict the future here, but I think it's going to be an interesting future 5-10 years.
And you can never tell something that comes up out of the blue, right?
What is one thing that is undeniably an asset? One, it's obviously physical goods, especially if you have a machinery or a location or licenses that your competitors don't have. And that's a competitive advantage. But also, I was talking with a friend about this. He's got a program he's got 5,000 members, monthly members. And we were talking about how we're just talking for fun here, but even if the US dollar collapsed, that he has 5,000 people that are coming to him for a service every month. And that even if the dollar collapsed, these people would barter with him. They'd send potatoes. They'd offer to tutor his kids. Oh. Someone would offer to come and do landscaping or do for him what they did. And so there's real value in your customer list and that, and knowing and having good relationships, whether it's with the bank or with whoever that is, right? Your customers, your vendors. And I think that's a really important part of this, is that, and even when you're talking about getting to know people that you can trust, sharing what you're doing with your business, really being in it for the sake of adding value to the communities that you're in. And I think that there's maybe a common sense that's not necessarily so common in there. Like you talked about earlier in the call, about having fun was what we were doing. Having fun and trying to be excellent at what we do and genuinely help people. And that I think that no matter what, that's probably the best path, because even if secretly you don't have any empathy, and all you want to do is stack gold coins in your closet, the best path forward is to take the best care you can of your customers, the best care you can of your vendors, the best care you can of your staff. Because that's, if you're in this for the long haul, which is where you'll make the most money, you need the compounding effect of that over time. So it's in your best interest to be as excellent as you can be and help people. It doesn't mean you let them walk all over you, of course, but do your best to be your best and help each other as best as you can. And I think it's probably a great message, a message to share.
Daryl, I'd like to build on your message, because it actually ties in with what a banking relationship should be. When you open an account, whether you're a business or an individual, you should be looking at a long-term relationship. And your relationship should not just be with that person you're talking to at the bank, at the branch. Because I've seen a lot of clients that, you know, they like the person, the branch manager that they're talked to, that they talk to, and then when that branch manager moves to a different bank, then they open an account again with that branch manager wherever he goes. But the challenge is that whenever a salesperson moves to another institution, his institution might be paying him more money because maybe that's the reason why he moved. But he might not be able to offer the same services that he used to be able to offer where in his old company. So my advice to businesses is to really look beyond the person that you're talking to and look at the institution, what the institution offers, what is its reputation, what are its services, and at the same time, what does it have to support the services? So is this a company that's very lean, there are too few people in the branch to help you out, or is this a bank that values your time and, you know, gives you a lot of people who can attend to you? There's a unit that can support you for your after sales concerns. So try to look into that when you're choosing your bank and the services that they offer. You know, a lot of times I hear customers saying, you know, you banks are all the same, you offer the same thing. True, we may offer essentially the same kind of services. Internet banking is internet banking. It might just have a different look on the website or the app, but it's essentially does the same thing and gives you real-time information and lets you transact remotely. But you have to look beyond that. What's the support that the bank has to support not just the system, but also the people that you are talking to? I guess maybe one question you can ask the person you're talking to, if you're a business and somebody's presenting their services, you can ask them a personal question. How do they feel in their current company? You can tell a lot by if they talk highly about their company, and you can tell if they're being sincere. They can talk highly about why they like their company, why their company supports them. Then you have an institution that can support you, because if it values its people, it will value its customers.
That's a really good point. Alan, this has been a great interview. I've got a page of notes. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
I guess you've covered most of it. I can talk so long for cash management because, yeah, I went on this I'm trying to spread the gospel of cash management, because cash management is more than just electronic banking. It's really about solutions to help you. I think I just wanted to reiterate that message that you have to really choose the institutions that you work with, be it a supplier or a bank, and think of it as a long-term thing. Think of it that it will grow with you, with your business, as you become, you know, bigger, have more complex requirements, then you try to find an institution that can also cater to you as you grow.
Said Alan, if people have more questions, comments, or concerns, if they want to reach out and get in touch with you, what are some of the best ways for them to get in contact?
Yes, I'm on LinkedIn. So that's Alan Carlos. He's on LinkedIn. And they can visit any branch of Security Bank and look me up. But sure. Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn.
So look him up on LinkedIn.
I'm also on Facebook, but I try to limit my Facebook on weekdays. Yeah.
So find him on LinkedIn, Alan, A-L-A-N, Carlos, C-A-R-L-O-S. He's on, H-I-Z-O-N. So it's Alan Carlos, he's on, A-L-A-N, C-A-R-L-O-S, H-I-Z-O-N. We've got the right guy if he's based out of Manila, working for Security Bank, and is AVP Senior Sales Manager. So Alan, thank you so much for coming and sharing with my followers and I, knowing you have your own family, your own direct reports, your own obligations. Thank you for coming and sharing with all of us so we can all do a little bit better.
Thank you, Daryl, for having me on. It's a pleasure.